California camp, cruise, weddings, NYC, Shadow Lake, snow, shipwreck, RV, and ski, Hawaii, burger, garden, papers, beer, bed, bar, me. It's a Babysitter's Club super special.
Welcome to Stuck in Stony Brook, a podcast about the Babysitter's Club. Today, we're discussing Super Special 11, The Babysitters Remember.
This feels like an episode of a sitcom where they just do flashbacks.
Yeah, it's a clip show.
Right?
Yeah, it's a clip show, which they don't really do anymore. And so we're going through Friends finally with my kids, and they're very like confused by the clip show. And I'm like, oh, you guys, it's just a clip show, guys.
Yeah, it's like when the actors went on vacation.
Yeah, they only had time to record 6 minutes of live acting. And then...
Right.
Yeah. Oh, remember the time?
Yeah. Yeah. It is a clip show, but with some new clips that we haven't seen before.
Yeah. Some new
clips. That's true. Some of them go back further than before we met them.
Yeah. Yeah. I kept wanting it to like tie together more, but I guess it's kind of like a book of short stories.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I guess. Well, let's just get into these one sentence summaries.
You sound really enthusiastic about it, Anne.
Yeah.
Anne hates this book.
I don't hate it. It's just there's not a lot to say about it.
Yeah, I agree. They really make it hard with this one.
Yeah,
make it really hard for podcasters, you know?
Yeah, that's true. I don't think that Anna Martin was thinking about podcasters when she wrote this in 1994, and I'm kind of upset about her about that.
Yeah, that feels personal and rude.
Yeah, I know. It's the first time I've gotten mad at her.
Did this one come out in 1994?
Yeah, didn't it? I think we're still in 94.
I remember it.
Yeah.
Oh, you remember it.
Oh.
Vividly.
Emily
actually
has a memory.
It's true. Yeah,
this is a good joke, everyone. If you've not read the book yet, stay with us.
You did text us and say, I remember this book.
Yeah, you were like, I remember every chapter. And we were like, yeah. What? Because Emily doesn't remember her own third grade year. But
100%. Yeah, third grade is gone. Actually, fourth grade is gone.
Okay.
Do you want to go first? Anne?
Yeah.
Whoa. Are you trying to say the same thing the same time as me on purpose?
The same thing as the first time as me as a purpose? Sorry.
Okay. Wow.
Okay. Mine is the babysitters give themselves extra summer homework.
Yeah. That's pretty much it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That is what they do. That is what they do. Mine is just this book is a non-special list, a super non-special list. Like it didn't feel super special to me. It's like this is every, you know, the idea of a super special is, you know, you get stranded on an island or you go to Disney World. This is just like hanging out in Stony Brook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess I would summarize this as we get more insight into memories we knew they already had.
That was really good. I can tell you spent time on that.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you wrote it down in advance.
I didn't even write it down.
Oh my God.
I'm shocked. Shocked.
Oh, wait, you guys, we should probably back up and tell you about the members of the podcast.
So
I'm Emily Crandall, a feminist scholar. I'm a total individual and I like health food.
I'm Esme Schaller, an adolescent psychologist. I'm kind of bossy, but I have a big heart.
And I'm Anna I messed up my name. Hang on, let me try again. And I'm Anna Chikawa, a freelance writer. I'm a mischievous pragmatist with a sweet tooth. If you want to learn more about us and how we know each other, check out our prologue episode. I can't talk today.
I think you're doing great.
Okay, thanks. Also, rate and review us. It really helps people find the podcast. And if you have any questions, comments, or commentary about anything BSC related, drop us a line at stuckinstonybrook@gmail.com. You can also support us on Patreon at patreon.com/stuckinstonybrook. I did it.
Good job.
I'm so proud of you.
I'm really proud of you. Nice work. So one question I had is, what year is it during these different memories? Is it the initial time year or is it the subtraction year from when this book was published? Meaning, so Christy's memories are from when she's 10. That
right.
could be 1991.
Or 1994.
1992, actually. Yeah, 1991. Or it could be 1984.
Right. 84, sorry. That's what I meant. Yeah. Interesting.
And it was hard. Like, for ones when they're younger, I wanted to, like, picture what was happening in the world around them.
Yeah, and you're like, I can't, is it the 80s or the 90s? I'm out of place.
It's a big difference.
Yeah. They should have dropped some clues, like what was on the TV.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff that Anna Martin's really good at.
As Charlie was listening to the new album, Born in the USA.
Like, yeah. Released just yesterday. Yeah.
I mean, it would have just been Mary Poppins anyway. or Parent Trap.
Yeah.
I wrote basically one sentence or question for each of the stories.
Oh, okay. That's a good thing. Well, should we say what we just sort of hinted at, but basically they have a regular, what did I do on my summer vacation assignment? But
then Christy's freaking out because she's like, how could I possibly put it into two pages? about this. And then they're at the sleepover. I think Jesse says, they're like just discussing, right? Mm-hmm. Bonding. And Jesse throws out the question of what's your most vivid memory? Mm-hmm. Like, what is the memory that you remember the most vividly? Not just like what was impactful or whatever. And so all the girls, in addition to doing their homework that was assigned to them, do this extra homework assignment that they made up for themselves.
Yeah.
And like Logan does it. Shannon does it. Dawn does it. They all do it.
Yeah.
So did they do their other assignment too?
Of course.
I wrote about my most vivid memory this summer.
No. Their other assignment is just, what did you do on your summer vacation?
Well, exactly. What did they do?
I just made a joke.
Oh, I didn't get the joke. Okay. Yeah, we're all in top form today.
Yeah, this is really embarrassing for you guys. Leave me out of it.
Emily's going to save the podcast today.
Yeah. I feel like we're going to have like a little book club. Like Emily's going to throw out a question or like a comment and we're just going to react to it.
Oh, yeah. It's Babysitter's Club book club. That's what this is. Yep. It's great. Like, thanks for facilitating us. Oh, yes. We get to go to a class. Go ahead, Dr. Crandall.
This is kind of how I teach. Okay. So Christy tells a story about her first time she gets to babysit David Michael, which is very endearing and cute. And like all the neighbors check on her and blah, blah, blah. But the thing that I noted in Christy's story, which isn't actually from her memory, it's in the setup, is that she whines about the fact that the teacher gave them page lengths for the essay. And I actually deeply agree with this. I hate when make an argument about something and people are like, how many pages, double space or single space? And I'm like, I don't fucking care. Like enough pages so that you do it well and not so many pages that I want to poke my eyeballs out. I hate page lengths. I think they're arbitrary and dumb. And I could not agree with Christy more on this point. That has nothing to do with her story, but that's the note I made for Christy.
That is not it. So I agree with you personally. That is not a very, it's not a helpful defining of the lanes for neurodiverse students. Like your point is well taken. You need to have enough to make the point. But if you don't give people, particularly I'm thinking of ADHD, if you don't give a like, it needs to be at least this long though, because I don't have faith that you can make the argument in less than this, then it's going to be really hard. So just a thing to consider.
But what if I don't want to read it? That's the problem for me.
I mean, your minimum could be very short, but you still want to make sure that it's like enough to make a competent argument.
That's me.
I know. I'm sorry.
I'm a little harsh in my vibe today.
I get it, though. I hear you. So you, and also like Christy has a similar, your Christy overlap is definitely like
impatience with the rules.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was going to say this rule is bullshit, but yes. Yeah. You said it in a nicer way.
Okay. My other note, like observation about Christy's actual memory is that I think she's way too overeager to go to work, which tracks, but like, bro, you're 10. She's like begging to be allowed to be in charge of David Michael. And I was like, it's just real tough.
Yeah.
Like you're going to have to work your whole life.
Yeah.
Why are you so eager to start?
She's a worker. She's an entrepreneur. She can't help it. It's in her soul. That's what we're supposed to
do. She needs to take a nap.
No, it did make me a little sad that that was Christy's like vivid formative memory. It's like that's her whole personality is that she likes to work and babysit. I was like, and I don't think that's true because Christy's, I think, very well rendered throughout the series. She's one of the better written characters. And for this, I was like, really? We couldn't get something else. I wanted to hear a little bit more about her dad. I think we got hints of Mr. Thomas across a lot of the stories.
Well, Claudia tells a kind of gross detail, which is that every time she rang the doorbell so that they could walk to school together, she like got the creeps from whenever he answered the door, which I'm like, ugh.
Yeah. Yeah. She was like praying that he'd have anybody but him answered it. Yeah.
Okay. Does anyone have any reactions to Christy being too eager to work?
Yes. Okay. Anne, what do you think?
I mean, Christie's was just sort of predictable. Mm-hmm. Like nothing new. It's just kind of an extension of her character. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was, you know, she talked about her mom and how she feels like she was modeling her mom, which was Esme's thoughts.
Yeah, it was very sweet, right? Like that at 10, she could understand and see how hard her mom was working and everything she'd done for the family in the past 3 years since Mr. Thomas left. And I think it also, it showed us that Christy's obsessed with work, but it also showed us just how thoughtful Christy is more broadly. You know, Marianne gets the credit often for being sensitive, but Christy pays a lot of attention. Christy really sees the people that she cares about, mm-hmm. you know, like she understands a lot about them. And I think that a lot of 10-year-old middle children wouldn't be spending as much time thinking about things from her mom's perspective.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair.
And that's what leads her to ultimately to start the club, right? Is that perspective taking, that understanding.
To provide a resource that can make her mom's life easier.
Yeah. Yeah. So I thought that was sweet.
Moving on from Christy.
Great. Mm-hmm.
The Claudia story is the one I remember the most vividly. The second, okay,
but you
I read
Stacey.
Oh, I wrote
in order.
Order.
Okay, great.
Do we want to go in order?
We don't have to go in order. I just
let's go in order. Okay. Stacey, I have a theory. Okay. Parker Academy is Gossip Girl.
Yeah.
Say
they,
more.
They like sit on the steps and wait for each other to go into school together. And like the headmaster's like, now. And then they like mean girl the shit out of everyone. The new kid is first shunned. And then she like spreads the rumor all around school about Stacey wetting the bed. And then it like she like becomes, I know you guys only watched one episode of Gossip Girl, but she like becomes the queen bee, which is like a thing.
Yeah.
You know, Blair Waldorf is the queen bee and everyone calls her that. And then when she graduates, she has to literally like deputize a new queen bee. And the other girls vie for the spot. Like, this is like, that's what Sally, whatever her face is, this one, the one with Sally?
No.
That's the Shannon story.
That's Shannon's story, which is the other sophisticated blonde. No, this is Allison Ritz.
Yeah. So Allison, like, in order to ingratiate herself to the crew and to become, to like develop some social and political, frankly, cachet at the private school, she trades in rumors.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
It's just the Upper West Side, not the Upper East Side.
Yeah. Yeah, completely. So do you think the writers of Gossip Girl read Babysitters Remember?
This super special specifically. Yes, I do.
Yeah.
That's my hot take for the Stacey story.
Is it Cecily von Ziegler? Is that the writer? Does she do something else?
I do not know.
Is that a made up name or is that a real name?
No, that's a real YA author. Okay.
But I think Anne means, is that her actual given name or is it a pen name?
I didn't. Correct. But that's okay.
Sorry. I don't know the answer to that, but I do want credit for pulling her name out of my ass because she is who wrote Gossip Girl, which I have not read. And I've only watched one episode of the show. And I know that person's name.
Well, who are you? Mary Lou Henner?
Deep cut. Mary Lou Henner. 60 Minutes reference. I wonder if any listeners will get that. Yeah. We'll talk more about memory later.
When did the Gossip Girl books come out?
Do, do, do.
Researcher?
I feel like we need research music.
That's a really good idea. The original Gossip Girl came out in 2002. So 6 years after this.
Okay. So she definitely read this book.
Yeah. And it's von Ziegesar, not von Ziegler. I missed one letter.
Naturally. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is her real name.
I was kind of surprised how mean Lane was.
So mean.
I wasn't. We knew she was cool. We knew she was sophisticated. We knew she was rich. We knew her dad is influential in New York creative circles. She's going to be mean in seventh grade. Seventh grade's the nadir of girls' development. She's going to be at her worst then. So I thought that made sense. And you see some of Stacey's like struggles, but also she doesn't not want to be in the best group.
She doesn't not want to be near the queen bee.
Yeah. What was really interesting to me was how open they were about like, well, so-and-so is off to boarding school. So now there's a spot, you know, like
that's Gossip Girl.
Yeah.
It's like literally the plot of the whole show.
Let's get our friend Cecily on the show.
That would have been funny.
Can someone explain boarding school to me? I just don't get it.
It's when you go away to school and live.
I know that, but like.
Okay. What don't you understand?
So rich people send their kids away for the majority of the year to get a better something. Is it supposedly better or do they just not want their kids around?
You know, Mary Wollstonecraft in 1792 in A Vindication of the Rights of Woman has a very searing critique of boarding schools where she argues that it's in part where kids of the elite learn like all the bad habits that sort of rot them in terms of moral character. And particularly it's where they learn, what's the term that she uses? Idleness. She thinks that idleness is like the vice of the wealthy, that they don't work on anything that's meaningful or like do anything for themselves. And boarding school is kind of like where they learn that. They like teach, they treat the people who work there like staff. And then when they come home, because they have been away for so long, they just like act out. And so they're not, they don't cultivate a sense of like home or place or like regard for the familial dynamics in the home. It's kind of was like very much radical for the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to send my kids away. They're at their most fun that they've been yet. Why would I want to throw them away high school? But yeah, I think I think it's often a tradition in families, right? So like if you went to a boarding school and you had a good experience, you want that experience for your kid. And if it's one of the like fancy ones, then it does offer connections. And I mean, it's obviously not stuff that any of us have access to or I think would want access to, but I also think people do have good experiences. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
I don't get it personally. But anyway, it gave Allison this opening.
To join Gossip Girl.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I did like we knew the general outline of the story of Stacey's diagnosis, but I liked hearing it. Like, I liked a little bit more, like, seeing the appointment with the psychiatrist who helped her realize that it was diabetes. Yeah.
And actually, did you buy that they would get that diagnosis that fast?
She's showing really, really classic signs, and mm-hmm. psychiatrists are doctors. So I did, because okay. I think it was so bad at that point. And the fact that she'd grown an inch and a half and lost 4 pounds and was drinking all the time and was not there are 13-year-olds that wet the bed habitually and she was not, right?
So, guys, I think we're going to need to tighten up our per story minutes here. we're getting a little long.
Okay. I'm sure we'll have less to say about some other ones.
That's true. Some of my sentences are not very long or insightful. Who's next?
Claudia.
Okay. This story.
Best one.
I remember so well. The second I started reading it, I was like, oh my God, this is the one with the butterfly. Like she's the art teacher who Claudia seems like she likes at first, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, this is the best class, like says draw a self-portrait. And everyone's like, what do you mean? And she's like, you as you imagine yourself. And Claudia is super, super excited. She uses like every crayon in the box. She draws herself as this like beautiful butterfly. And then everyone takes their portraits to school and the teacher's unrolling them. And Claudia's is last. And she's like, what is this? What a fucking cunt. Sorry. Just like crazy. And then Mimi, like, Esme's gonna sob.
I'm sobbing already.
Mimi goes back to school with Claudia and tells her teacher off, which is just like so, so good. I was also crying, to be clear. And tell me you cried in that story.
My eyes watered.
Yeah. I cried so hard that Gary paused he was in a meeting in his office and came out into the kitchen to see if I was okay. I was like sobbing. It's so good. It's such a beautiful representation of Claudia, of how Mimi was there for her, of problems in rigid education, there's so many layers to it.
Yeah, it just, I was shocked because I don't think about it, but like the second I started reading it, I was like, I know what this is. And it like made the rest of the book click for me, actually. Like I didn't realize until I read the Claudia story how much I remembered the whole book. And it's just like, I think it's just so, and it's very telling that it like stuck with me that long. I was like, oh, this is the butterfly one. I remember this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they referenced it in Sue Ding's documentary, The Claudia Kishi Club, mm-hmm. that came out in 2020. So
I remember that.
A couple of people.
I watched it.
Yeah. A couple of people read that part. I think Naya Kusakoff is one of the people that read some of that section in talking about Mimi and talking about Claudia. But I didn't remember it. I don't think I read this book. Do you think we read this, Anne? I don't think I read this one.
No.
It was new to me for sure. And so I knew it was coming at some point and I was like, oh, this must be that. But I didn't know it was going to be like as good as it is.
Yeah.
It's just so, and I totally get like in terms of like the reasons it would be a vivid memory for Claudia to just like highlight some things we know from the memory research. There's like the shame factor, right? Mm-hmm. And there's like, she's already, we also get a lot of indications in these chapters of Claudia having ADHD. I feel very vindicated, right? Like, so she's not staying in the lines, so to speak. She's not sitting still. She's not listening. Already at 6, people are like, Claudia, do you understand the assignment? Are you paying any attention to me? Right? So she's developing this negative narrative about herself in school, but knows that her crayons are her happy place. Mm-hmm. And then also this bond that she, you know, Mimi already understands her, but then, I have to stop talking. Anne, you say some more about it.
No, I think it was such a good like chapter because it was like, I feel like Claudia is oftentimes overlooked, as we know, like as seen as kind of like not academically smart. And, you know, she acts, sometimes she gets painted as a clown, as we mm-hmm. discussed in a recent episode.
Yeah. But Ellen Miles really, really makes yeah. Claudia a class clown.
Right. And she's like, I think this showed really her point of view on like life in general mm-hmm. And how she sees the world. And I thought that was really cool from just like mm-hmm. a young age being yeah. like, you know, oh, I see myself as like a butterfly. And it's so mm-hmm. different from like what all the other kids took to mean this time. It's mm-hmm. That was really yeah. cool.
It also sounds like it was the most aesthetically appealing one. Like,
yeah.
the other kids just drew like a circle with some eyes. Like, yeah. they're not even good artists.
I know. It's like stick figures or whatever. Yeah.
Marianne did her braids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But then so in terms brutal. Of like, I love a short story. This was a perfect short story. This is like some of the other ones I feel like didn't have a plot. This right. had a beautiful plot and arc and gave us so much insight into Claudia and Mimi. And also for this one, I'm going to say, I think that was in 1980 mm-hmm. because I don't think that that would happen the same way. Like it's more likely to happen that way in 1980 than because mm-hmm. there's like a few different education revolutions and changes in the 80s that I think would lead a teacher to react a little bit different. I mean, it could have been a really old teacher.
Right. And, who isn't up yeah. on the new pedagogy yeah. or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. But yeah. I think it's more likely to happen in 1980.
So beautiful. I didn't know I would never forget that, but
yeah.
never forget.
Is it your most vivid memory?
I don't know. Maybe. I don't remember. What's the next
good one? Jessie.
Oh, yeah. Okay. This one is really interesting. So she's remembering Squirt being born and not being excited about Squirt. But we learn that Jessie's mom had two miscarriages yeah. before Squirt, which I think is actually really interesting and actually statistically quite accurate. So a very interesting thing about like assisted reproductive technology in the U.S. is that it is overwhelmingly consumed or used by white women. But Black women actually experience infertility at way higher rates than white women do. So it's like a, you know, there's a lot of, I've talked about Dorothy Roberts on the podcast before, but she talks about the kind of fertility industry as like having actually a kind of racial social control component, even if it's not nefarious or like malicious, but that mm-hmm. Black women by and large, like proportionally can't afford like IVF and ART and stuff like that. And, but actually do experience infertility at higher rates. And then we've talked a lot about maternal fetal mortality on this podcast but like, I think it's interesting that, that like, I wonder how far along she was in the pregnancies. Mm-hmm. Jessie doesn't say, but she does say like both babies died, which is kind of yikes.
Yeah, she was phraseology. She was far enough along that the kids knew that she had one.
So it could be on the one hand that like a sort of natural infertility, biological infertility, mm-hmm. but it could also be unfortunately like bad care, and like both are true in the U.S. So I thought that was like, I don't know if this writer was thinking about that, but it's like a very accurate, I think, like little detail about Jessie's mom that we hadn't learned before.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it also gives us insight into the Ramseys more broadly mm-hmm. of how much they wanted a big family. And it also, it makes sense, right? Because Becca and Jessie are really close in age and mm-hmm. then there's this big gap. So that also makes sense. Like sometimes people have a planned big gap, but clearly now we know it was not planned for the Ramseys. Yeah. That's really interesting, Emily. Thank you for bringing that in.
You're welcome.
Yeah. I was sad. Oh, do you have other stuff for the Jessie section?
No, I just meant on more stories.
No. I just wanted to correct some colic stuff. A childless woman wrote these chapters. Colic does not start the day you get home from the hospital. It usually doesn't start until babies are 3 or 4 weeks old. And at the time this was written, they thought it was due to gastrointestinal distress, but we know that that is not the case anymore. It just seems to be random. Some babies get colic and some babies don't. And it usually goes from about 3 weeks to about 3 months. So she got the like stopping at 3 months part, right? But there is no such thing as a 2-day-old colicky baby. That's just not a thing that happens. They're too little and tired at that point. Like they don't have the energy to cry that much. And Squirt was a little early, so it's even less likely.
Like a month early.
Yeah. So it's even less likely that he would be crying up a storm the like day he gets home from the hospital. Yeah. So that was not realistic. The point was still made and it was a sweet story. And I like the Jessie and Squirt are about as far apart as you and me, Emily. Mm-hmm. So I related to that as well. That's one of my more vivid memories from childhood is meeting Emily for the first time.
Are you going to cry again?
Yeah, probably. Now we're in the sad section. Claudia, Jessie, miscarriages, babies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who's next?
Logan.
Why is my list so out of order? I don't know.
I don't know.
I can't explain my
brain. Did you skip around?
No, I didn't. All I wrote for a Logan was ass kisser.
Oh my God.
I'm sorry. He claims his most vivid memory is seeing Marianne for the first time. That guy's trying to get it in high school. Spot the lie.
So I was mad because we just get a recap of Logan likes Marianne, basically. I enjoyed the first chapter where he's talking about how they have to leave Louisville and like this trip that they took and his like worries and frustration and him coloring in Hunter's coloring book in the car because he's so bored. And like all of that I liked, kind of this insight into the Bruno family and Logan's emotions about moving at this like particular developmental period in seventh grade. It's a hard time to move, or eighth grade, I guess, beginning of eighth grade. But then we get into like literally just the events of Logan likes Marianne, where I was like, why? And he doesn't even describe them very differently than Marianne does.
No, we get like a little bit more of his inner monologue, but like you still get that he, in Marianne's narration, you get that he was like talking about her because you hear the other guys being like, I think it was ass kissy.
My favorite part of this chapter is just how much Logan likes to color.
Yeah, me too.
I know. I feel like Logan and Claudia should be buds, weirdly.
Yeah.
They can go like sailing together and then paint.
And then,
yeah.
He was really into it.
He was.
He was like, no, I want to finish Barnyard Buds or whatever the page was called. Yeah. I also would have liked it, you know, if we're going to have it be that he's obsessed with Marianne and she like saves him or whatever, like why not some memories that we don't know about? Like we have the one of like her seeing him, seeing her in the hallway and she doesn't notice him. But the rest of it is all stuff we've already heard. So like, I feel like he must have had some experiences outside of Marianne's awareness. And we could have been like him nervous to call her on the phone or like any number of other things that give us a little bit more insight.
Mm.
Yeah.
I thought it would have been cool if he had like a crush on someone else first and then
Stacy or Tracy.
He was like Tracy Stacy and then like, oh wait, actually who's Marianne?
Yeah.
I thought it was funny too that he was like, she wasn't the prettiest, but there's just something about her. I was like, yikes.
Does he say she's not pretty or he says she's not dressed well? I don't think he said she's not pretty.
No, but I think he said like she wasn't like the prettiest girl in school. Not that she's not pretty.
Gotcha.
But it's just kind of a funny way to frame it, I think.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Oh, she was pretty, but that wasn't why I was looking at her.
Oh, okay. Okay.
He said the truth is she wasn't glamorous or sophisticated.
Oh, there we go. Okay.
Yeah.
She wasn't glamorous or sophisticated.
Yeah.
Not like Stacy Tracy.
Yeah. Oh, the one thing I did like, though, is that they had him say the same lines that he says when he introduces himself to the BSE, but it's not in the like terrible Louisville accent because, of course, it's his narrative. So he just says it normally. So I laughed out loud at that. Louisville, I've had plenty of experience.
That's so funny.
And I was like, no, sorry. You said, I've had plenty of experience. Like, that's not what you said. You're not being accurate. I thought that was really funny.
Didn't we make Anne read that?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
That's why I did it now, because I was like, oh, I can't make Anne do it again.
Well, I met some people from Louisville, like at a restaurant, just like sitting next to us. And it took a lot for me not to say like, hey, do you... Like, as if Logan Bruno was a real person.
Do you know Logan Bruno?
Do you know the Bruno family?
Yeah, so I read this book called The Babysitter's Club, and there's a character in it who's from Louisville.
They moved in 1986, but maybe you knew them?
Yeah.
So funny.
Oh, I guess 88, probably.
Love that. Yeah.
Okay, Mal's next.
This story weirded me out so much.
Why? Oh, because you don't understand fandom.
Yeah. Is it normal to like openly weep when you meet a famous?
People do it a lot. Yes.
Wow. I'll just never understand. Please explain.
She goes to meet her favorite author. Yeah. She goes to meet her favorite author at Washington Mall. She writes a letter to her first at Marianne's suggestion. Mm-hmm. And we get a lot more internal monologue about Mallory at 10 idolizing the members of the BSE. And Marianne suggests she write to her. And then she gets a letter back that's a form letter, but she's still really excited. But at the bottom in handwriting is like, hey, I'm going to be at Washington Mall. I think that's near you. And then she goes to meet, what's the author's name?
Amelia Norton?
Yes, no. Amelia Norton. No, it's not that. Moody. Amelia Moody.
Moody.
Yeah.
Which seems like a Judy Blume, like it seems like a funny or like maybe a Lois Lowry kind of person. Mm-hmm. And then she's really, really nervous. She like wears a cute outfit and gets it. And then when she gets to the front, she like can't talk because she's too nervous and she cries. Yeah. So there's a chance that I might get to meet Judy Blume this summer because we're on our Girl Scout trip to Key West. We're going to meet with the staff at her bookstore to learn about banned books and censorship in Florida. And if she's in town, she's going to meet with the Girl Scout troop. But if she's not, we're just meeting with the staff. And I'm really like, I'm sure I will cry. Like, and I'm nervous.
But you won't be like stunned into silence.
No,
will you?
I'll be able to talk, but I'm also in my 40s.
Yeah.
I don't know if I had met Judy Blume at 10, or if I had met Anna Martin at 10, absolutely would have done exactly what Mallory is doing. And Anna Martin is writing this with the experience of being on the other side and watching little girls do this.
I'll just never understand. Wow.
We can't all be in such Herculean control of our emotions as you, Emily.
Mm-hmm. I mean, random shit makes me cry all the time. It's not that I don't cry. I don't know. What was I going to say? Fuck, I lost it. Nope, it's gone.
Your vivid memory is gone.
Yeah, I forgot the book.
What did you think of this, Anne?
It was cute, I guess. I mean, it wasn't that enthralling.
Yeah.
But it was small. Part of her personality ambitions is that she wants to be a writer. So this that's kind of like what most of the stories are. It's just like reinforcing a important personality trait about them.
Or a like formative experience.
Yeah. Within the realm of the BSC universe of what we know about them.
Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I remember what I was going to say. Esme, did you cry that time that you saw Sarah Bareilles and she did that cool thing for you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I'm not like a Sarah Bareilles fan. Mm-hmm. It was just, Emily's referencing a time when we met Sarah Bareilles on the streets of New York City and I had a patient who was really obsessed with her and she like recorded a video for like a message for my patient.
And it was her idea.
It was her idea. She was like, Sarah Bareilles is immense, you guys. She was like with her boyfriend and she's like, oh, here. Okay, so give it to him and you walk up and then I'll walk in like, oh, hey. And she like directed it and did it all. Yeah. And it was amazing.
I thought I remembered you crying.
Yeah. It was just so amazingly sweet and like so nice. But yeah, I think, that's interesting. It's not worth doing a research study on because we need to know a lot of other things about human behavior. But I think a lot of people cry when they meet a famous because there's also the parasocial aspect of it, right? Like people feel like they know somebody if they've watched a lot of their work and like, yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. What's next?
Shannon.
Oh, yeah.
And okay. The exotic and mysterious Sally White.
I think this is so funny. So it's like a sort of similar to Stacey's story, but like insofar as it's like some mean girls mean girling. But Shannon pitches the story as like a time when she was tempted to the dark side. And like, I don't think that that's an accurate description of her actual experience. She got like for one day, instead of studying for the astronomy club test, she goes to this girl's house. And then the next day she's like, nah, I got to study. She studies, she passes the test and she joins the astronomy club. There's like no consequences for her actions. And she didn't even do anything that bad. Like,
right. Except that I think she could feel, even though she didn't particularly like Sally, she could feel the pull of this like new person who's exotic and sophisticated and has cachet.
Yeah.
Like invite, like choosing her.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that she and all of her little group want to be chosen.
Yeah. I do think the like after school special message of this one, which is that becoming friends is a two-way street, is good. But like, I don't know. Sure. I don't think it's absent from the BSC universe, so I don't think it was necessary.
Right. I just like to hear a little more. Like anytime we get to hear from Shannon, I'm happy because I feel like
her voice.
I like her voice and she's been like off to the side a bit. And so I like to know more about her and the things that she likes and cares about. And we get a little bit more, like I like that she's, you know, that she's an early gifted kid. Like without knowing much about Shannon and how much she loves school and loves learning, it could seem like she's just doing like the average rich kid thing of padding her resume for college. college, kind of.
Right.
But this gives you a little bit more insight into her, like, passion for things and how, like, excited she is about getting into the astronomy club and being invited to join, even though it's mostly kids in the upper school and things
I
like
thought
that.
It was interesting that she's like, look, I know I live in a mansion, but my home life is kind of tough. And I was kind of bummed that we didn't get that story.
Yes, me too. I'm wondering, special edition readers request, Shannon's story is coming soon. It's in like 4 or 5 books. So we're done with the 2 Logan ones and we get a Shannon one. That's a whole book. So I'm hoping that we get to hear a little bit more from her then. I read this back in the day, but I remember nothing about it.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I liked it. The fact that Sally White got someone tickets to the Bruce Springsteen concert leads me to believe this is more likely 1987 than 1994. But people just saw him last week. It just seems like I don't think young teens would be excited to see him in 1994.
Probably not.
Right?
Yeah, and you really thought about that. You were like, no.
Anne's going to consider a question about the boss carefully before she answers.
Probably not. Yeah.
I also laughed out loud at that one of Shannon's friends' names is Greer, because I feel like that's a very like 80s, 90s rich girl name.
The only Greer I went to school with, there's a family that Aaron and I went to school with where the daughters were Greer, Blythe, and Wren with a W.
Wow.
So those don't all go together. Wren doesn't go with Greer and Blythe. Greer and Blythe belong with Shannon and Stacy at the private schools. And Wren is just, I think Wren, they were just ahead of their time. Wren is like a big name now.
Interesting. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, Shannon's story, kind of boring. That's when I put the book down. I was like, I don't know. In fact, in my notes, I wrote a little summary of everybody's story, except I forgot about her story. I didn't write it down.
That's really funny.
I liked hers way better than Logan's. Like, at least something happened that I didn't know about already.
I think what's hard about her story is we don't know a lot about her. Mm-hmm. So to get backstory on her is not very meaningful. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, so like we really don't know much about her personality.
Yeah.
Like we know more about Logan than we knew about
Shannon. True. Yeah. That's fair.
All right. Moving on to Dawn.
Okay. Dawn is such a sexist little biatch in this book.
Yeah.
In this story, she blames her mom for their divorce. She's like, the dad's going out all night. And the mom's like, what the fuck? Are you not even going to help me like raise our children? And then Dawn's like, what did you do to make him hate you?
That's so Dawn.
She's 12. She doesn't understand. And she's swimming in the patriarchy. So it's not her fault. She's internalized that he should have rights to do what he wants.
Yeah. I was just like, damn, Dawn, that is ruthless.
Yeah.
Like,
really brutal. Your poor mom.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking about like, how old do you think Mr. Schaefer is here?
I don't know. Like 30.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like, I mean,
they had children when they were like,
I don't think they
18.
Were 18. So I think he's probably like 35.
Yeah.
I think they had children when they were like 23, 22.
Yeah, a lot of people did in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. You and I were weird. We had very old parents.
But. Yeah. Well, even those are very young.
When I was born, my mom was 29 and she was a lot older than all the moms of people my age growing up. Yeah.
Well, if they were 22 when they had Dawn, then I feel like they actually turned out a lot better than they could have.
They're 23. They're She's 12 in the story, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
They're my age getting divorced.
That was the world's quickest divorce.
Mm-hmm.
Like, divorce doesn't happen that fast. I understand that there's stuff happening behind the scenes that Dawn doesn't know, but like, it's like a week between like, everything's fine to we're moving to Connecticut.
Yeah. It's crazy.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Also, where was he?
I just assume he's having an affair.
Is that what we assume?
But I think he's also just getting drunk with his buddies and not wanting to spend time with his annoying wife who wants him to be responsible.
Yeah.
I don't know. What, you think he has some other, like he's learning how to weld or something? Or what are you...
I don't know. Well, when they were talking about, we disagree about everything. And then it was like, how to raise you guys, blah, blah, blah. And then like other stuff. And then I was like, well, what's the other stuff?
I know. I want, can we get like a super special from the perspective of all the adults?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
They're but like not written for children.
Right. I like think about this more deeply, Emily. I'm very excited about this. We get a Richard chapter.
Uh-huh.
We get a Liz Thomas chapter. Mm-hmm. We get a Watson chapter.
I want to learn about what the fuck was up with Mr. Thomas, and I want an adult perspective on it.
Yes.
I do not want a middle schooler's perspective on it.
Yes. I want Mimi to write the chapter about Patrick Thomas.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you know she saw some shit.
She saw some shit. Mimi was around. Mimi saw everything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. As Mr. and Mrs. Kishi and Mr. Spear were off at work.
Yeah.
Mimi knew what was going on.
I feel like her chapter would be like 3 pages, but like really like cutting. Like just like spitting facts.
Right. Mimi doesn't waste words.
No.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't have very many in English, apparently.
Yeah. Well, she has enough to tell that teacher she was a cunt.
That's true. Like,
you asked my Claudia to draw how she sees herself.
Oh, stop it.
Sorry. That was mean.
God. All right. What are your other notes about Mr. Schaefer?
Nothing.
Yeah. That was rough. Yeah. But then Dawn's most vivid memory is also meeting Marianne.
Yeah, that's so funny.
I was like, Anna Martin, you're showing your solipsism a little bit.
Marianne is in a lot of the memories. She's the one who gives Mallory the idea.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. She's obviously in Christie's and Claudia's.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Marianne.
Oh, yeah. Marianne's story is so weird.
Her Mrs. Tate story?
Okay. But, like, I feel like we have not really gotten this detail about her childhood, which is that she just had, like, a rotating door of babysitters.
Yeah, that doesn't seem right.
Yeah. It doesn't seem right.
It doesn't seem like Mr. Schaefer would be cool with that.
Mr. Spear.
Sorry. Yes, Mr. Spear.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just like, I don't buy this as...
I mean, I get how he would have to, right? Because he needs to support her and he needs to work. But it seems like he would offer to pay the Thomases or to pay Mimi.
I find it really implausible that one of the families wouldn't have insisted that Marianne can be there after school. She is like a literal angel child who helps out and is like quiet.
Yeah,
and
she's like a mouse that will do dishes.
Yes.
Like, why would you not want,
why would you not want her over there?
You're hyperactive, Claudia, or Keely, or Christy.
Yeah.
Any parent would be happy to have Marianne over every afternoon.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I guess we know that he's kind of like prideful and stubborn, but I just find it implausible.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I find it implausible that he wouldn't have let one of them persuade him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I also find it implausible that they wouldn't have tried.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think he's also, so why wouldn't they have tried? He's mourning. He's like standoffish. He is formal and private.
Yeah. But in some of the Marianne books, we get kind of hints that the moms were friends and that they're also mourning the loss of Marianne's mom.
Right.
And I think it would have been on the table.
Yeah. Agreed.
But didn't her mom die when she was a baby?
Yeah.
And in this, she's 8 in this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so babysitter comes. They think she sucks, but then she ends up being fun.
Let's talk about why they think she sucks.
Yes, her lips are like prunes, like everyone from the agency.
Yeah. But specifically, the crime that she commits is Marianne.
She won't let Marianne have a brownie?
Marianne have a brownie for her after school snack. She wants her to have an apple. This is the crime.
Yeah.
For an 8-year-old.
But also, it's not just no brownie. It's like, well, what are you having for dinner at your sleepover? Pizza? Nah. Like, if you're having pizza, you can't also have a brownie, which I'm like, oh, that seems reasonable to me.
Right. Like, it's, you know, we could have a separate conversation about fat phobia and policing what kids eat, but like especially in 1994, that was a very reasonable suggestion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
to, like, have a healthy snack because you're gonna pig out with your friends later.
Yeah.
And Christy's like, that's it, finish her.
Christy's pranks are so intense.
Yeah, like an 8-year-old, like, we'll put pepper all over her food.
Which one was your favorite? My favorite was nailing the slippers to the floor.
Yeah, nailing the slippers to the floor. That's so weird and funny.
Yeah, so they play all these pranks on Mrs. Tate, and she eventually starts saying, like, good one, girls. And then when they come down for breakfast in the morning, Mrs. Tate has, like, a stew on the stove of, like, old socks and, like, a tennis ball and stuff.
She pranked them back.
Yeah. I thought it was cute. I like this chapter for different but similar reasons to why I liked the Claudia chapter. I thought it was, like, a nice little short story and, like, gives some insights into their dynamics as kids. Mm-hmm. I like this idea that Christie's idea factory is not yet honed and is sort of unchecked. Mm-hmm. And she can convince Marianne to do it. Like, I want to know what they did to the washing machine.
I don't know.
She can make weird things happen. And so I thought it was a cute story and it was a nice, you know, Marianne was clear that it, like, gave her lessons for babysitting in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Like, helped her be sort of flexible and not uptight like her dad.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just, like, this is her most vivid memory.
Yeah. I could see that, though. I have very vivid memories of, like, mischief. you know, of like going TPing at a slumber party at Michelle's house and like mixing up like a poultice to flick at the boys who were coming to TP Michelle's house and things like that.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't talk about TPing on this show. My mom listens to it.
Your mom doesn't like TPing?
Oh, she really hates it.
Why?
It is like the most egregious crime you can commit against a person who loves their garden.
It's just toilet paper.
And it's like a sign of disrespect.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, she really hates it.
Really.
Note to self. TP Dana's house. TP Dana.
We're going to get some texts about that.
Her address is...
If you knew her address, I would be so impressed.
I don't know. I just know the town, but not the address.
Mm-hmm. So funny.
That's hilarious. Oh, well, thanks for taking us through that book club discussion, Emily.
Was that all of them?
That's all of them.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Which babysitter do you think we left out, Anne?
hang on. Let me see. I guess we got all of them.
Our fact checker.
I did a little bit of memory research, but I didn't really find anything sort of amazing. You know, memory is subjective. People distort their past. We have a lot of data from Elizabeth Loftus about that. I was reading, they did one study where if you created a biographical sketch for a fictional adolescent, it increases the confidence that you experienced details from that fictional adolescent's experiences in your adolescence.
What?
Yeah. The Germans do a lot of memory research. There's a whole journal called Memory, and a lot of things in it are from Germany. And they did a whole study on children and adolescents with keeping tangible memory objects and the way that helps like preserve a specific memory of like, oh, I got this at the circus when I was 7 and my aunt was in town. Like if you have like a specific thing, which is part of why we keep souvenirs from trips and things like that, right? But nothing souvenir. That was like...
Do you know what that means?
A souvenir in French? No.
Remember.
Ah.
The literal French word for remember.
You just blew my mind. I did not know that.
I thought you were fucking
with
me. I
didn't know that
either. No. Wait, really?
No.
Oh, well, yeah. Souvenir.
I don't parley France. I... That's very cool. That's very cool. Yeah. So it makes sense. But I it did get me thinking, like, do you guys have particularly vivid memories? I know Emily doesn't.
I mean, I have some, but they're like weird, just little details and things.
Yeah, same.
I have like really vivid memories of like making up songs in the car and like my dad being really annoyed with my friends.
So that would be your chapter if you wrote a book about our most vivid memory.
I don't know.
Like, if we wrote a book about our most vivid memory, what would it be?
It's just the three of us or the chapters?
Yeah, the three of us.
Well, then I would write about meeting Emily for the first time when she's a tiny baby.
Mm. And Anne for the first time.
Yeah.
Which I don't remember.
Yeah. I do have a very vivid memory of meeting Anne for the first time when she said something that she contends she didn't say.
Yeah. Mm. But I believe that's because my memory is bad.
Yeah. So it was the first day of second grade and my best friend from first grade and I, Michelle Altamirano, were in like a fight. This is very similar to Dawn and Marianne. So Michelle and I were in a fight and she was like, I'm not going to sit next to you in Mrs. Schultz's class. I'm going to sit next to Terry Shantz. And I was like, okay, fine. And so I didn't have anybody to sit next to. And Anne was sitting there with a blank seat next to her. And so I said, can I sit here? And she said, yeah. And then she turned to me and said, my brother says the teacher gets mad if you draw worms. And she drew this little worm, which is, what's his name? Slimy?
Ernie.
Ernie, right.
But he looked like Slimy from...
He looked like Slimy from Sesame Street, right. And then because...
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's actually maybe Claudia being a little bit of a class clown if Anne is Claudia tracks.
My brother says the teacher gets mad if you draw worms.
So I'm gonna draw worms.
I know exactly where the seat was in the classroom next. So yeah, one of my most vivid memories. Both of mine are meeting you guys.
Oh wow.
Mine's meeting Logan.
Either of you. Yeah.
Emily, my vivid memory is also meeting you. Yeah. We have the same vivid memory.
That's so weird.
I bet that Emily does not remember meeting Anne.
What?
Anne remembers meeting Emily, but more than Emily.
Do you remember holding Emily as a baby and you pooping in your diaper and me being like, oh, I think she pooped.
That's pretty funny. Yeah.
You pooped on me.
Nice.
Not on me, but while I was holding you.
Yeah.
You were wearing a diaper.
Yeah.
So without the diaper there, you would have pooped on Anne.
Yeah.
Missed opportunity.
Taking a turn.
I feel like next time I see Emily, I'm going to poop on her.
Yeah, and that story as we told makes you sound weird.
Our podcast retreat is getting more and more stressful. Okay. All right, tallies. Oh, was there any candy?
There wasn't any candy.
Yeah, that's interesting.
It's all pre-BSC, basically. So yeah. There's no meetings. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. One almond, a bossy, a shy, a sensitive, and a sophisticated. There's also sophisticateds related to other people, but just one for Stace.
I feel like there weren't any weird lines.
There was not much.
There really wasn't. Oh, I did want to say that I feel like the word dork was thrown around a lot in this book.
Yeah.
And we could call it dork.
You know that dork originally meant it came from penis.
Right. Yep.
Nice.
So everyone's calling each other penis.
Yeah.
Very important detail. Malfrey, for the
you're such a penis.
I wrote down weird and old. Because old? When they're at when Stacey's at the sleepover before she wets the bed, it says, my friends and I ate the pizzas in the living room in front of the VCR watching some weird old movie that Deirdre's father had promised we would like, but which really we just found weird and old. Which I remember that sensation from being a teenager deeply of mm-hmm. like an adult being like, oh, this is great. And then you're like,
don't get it.
Yeah. But I don't know. Did you guys have anything else?
I didn't. There weren't a lot of weird lines.
Yeah. We can do weird and old.
All right. We've got no other choices. I mean, it seems like that's what we're doing.
That's kind of funny paired with Babysitters Remember.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I also wrote down he likes junk. Logan was saying that Hunter wanted to know if Stony Brook had a dump.
Oh, yeah. He wants to go to the dump.
Yeah.
He likes junk is good.
Yeah.
Which let's go with weird and old.
Okay.
Okay.
Sounds good. What do you guys want a pizza toast to?
The etymological origins of the word dork.
Penis.
All right, you've let me do sincere ones for the past few, and I already cried for a long time about Claudia, so we can totally toast to dork meaning penis.
Okay.
A pizza toast to dork.
To dork.
To dork.
Penis.
Cock.
Man.
Oh, am I supposed to adjourn it?
Yes.
Wait, I lost my window.
You know what to say.
Okay, this episode is stuck in Stony Brook's now.
Thank you to Anna and Martin for everything. Stuck in Stony Brook is edited by Emily Crandall. Theme song written and recorded by Gary Schaller, performed by the band Kid Kit. You can follow us on Instagram at Stuck in Stony Brook or find us on our website, stuckinstonybrook.com. Need some books that we mentioned? Buy them from our bookshop and support both a local independent bookstore and your favorite series literature analysis podcast. Find us at bookshop.org/shop/stuckinstonybrook. Lastly, if you're feeling dibbly generous and you want to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, that would be super helpful. You're the best friends a girl could ask for.